Hi, I'm Dave Summers, and welcome to the American Management Association's new podcast series, Edgewise, where you'll hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matters. Our aim is to provide new perspectives to help you achieve performance excellence, adapt to changing business realities, and prosper in a complex and competitive world. AMA has earned the reputation as a trusted partner in worldwide professional development and education, improving the immediate performance and long-term results for individuals and organizations. Each year, thousands of customers learn new skills and behaviors, gain more confidence, advance their careers, and contribute to the success of their organization through a range of unique seminars and workshops, customized corporate programs, books and newsletters, and of course, our webcasts and podcasts. This week on Edgewise, we'll be hearing from Chip Bell, best-selling co-author of Managing Knock Your Socks Off Service. But before we get to Chip, we'd like to invite you to provide feedback on this podcast by either emailing us at podcast@amanet.org or calling us at 800-697-3406. The email address is podcast@amanet.org, and the phone number is 800-697-3406. Your email or phone message might be heard on a future episode. Chip R. Bell is the author or co-author of 14 books, including Customer Love, Attracting and Keeping Customers for Life, Customers as Partners, Building Relationships at Last, Managers as Mentors, Building Partnerships for Learning, and Managing Knock Your Socks Off Service with Ron Zemke. Chip's work has been featured on CNBC, CNN, Bloomberg TV, NPR, Voice of America, and Reuters, and in the Wall Street Journal, Fortune, USA Today, Entrepreneur Magazine, Inc. Magazine, and Business Week. Chip, in your new book, Managing Knock Your Socks Off Service, you talk to the manager. And one of the areas that I found interesting is, how do you coach somebody who's working with difficult customers?
That's a great question. I think if they only give feedback when they are dealing with difficult customers, it becomes challenging. I think what's important is that the context in which that feedback is given is what's going to make it work. I can be the absolute best giver of feedback, but if I'm the frontline person and I think you really don't care about me, if I think you're only interested in the bottom line, if I think that you've got an ulterior motive, even the best, most accurate feedback you may be giving me is probably going to be fall on deaf ears. So I think effective managers and leaders and supervisors need to think about, what else am I doing? Am I providing affirmation? Am I providing support? Am I providing a climate in which feedback is viewed as a tool for learning, not an opportunity for rebuke? Is the focus here, as I'm getting feedback, on the future? Or are you only resurrecting the past to make me feel guilty and bad and that I should be a more obedient child? So to me, while there's obviously great skills we can learn about how to be a great feedback giver, I think the attitude and philosophy and the context in which it's given is what makes it work or not work.
Chip, in today's world, with so much conversation around brand experience, how do you communicate to new hires what the vision is and what the brand experience should be?
I think it's a great question. I think it starts with the fact that you are in selecting them. And I think talking about the vision early in the conversation, you go to work for Disney, for example, you get to see kind of what it's going to be like as a cast member before you ever get past the first interview. And I think helping people say, okay, this is what you're getting into. This is what it's going to be like working here. Is this what you really want to do? I think that's the first step. And a part of that is saying, this is our vision, and this is what we do here and how we do it. So I'm sort of selecting in and out people who can live with that vision. I think it starts there. I think it also is born in the way in which people get onboarding, from the orientation that they go through. And do I hear an orientation, not just about policies and procedures, but what do you believe and what do you value and what's important here? Orr Schultze, who was the former CEO of Ritz-Carlton, said, you know, when you take individuals in orientation at the most impressionable time in their whole careers, why would you waste time on policies and procedures in that important time? Why not talk about the vision and the values and what we believe? So I think it starts there. I think that vision also needs to be woven throughout all the training they get, designed to equip them. I think it's, and then beyond that, it's lived and communicated in everything we do, every step of the way. It's not posters on the wall. You know, it's not some cute 3x5 card, threefold card that I have to carry around and review every time. I mean, all those may be helpful reminders, but I think at the in the end is, do I as a leader model it? Do I walk that talk in a way that says, I can see the service vision in you, my leader? So I think it needs to be everywhere. Ultimately, it's effective when it's sort of the air we breathe.
Chip, do you think storytelling is a good way to reinforce that vision?
I think it's a wonderful way. And if you look at some of the greatest leaders, well, greatest teachers for that matter, they tell stories. And everybody can tell stories. I mean, obviously some people are better than others at telling a riveting story. But I think everybody has the capacity to share an anecdote, a story, an illustration that sort of personifies the vision, that makes it come alive, that makes it real and not just something I read on a wall or words that I hear in some speech at celebration time when I'm giving out the end of the year awards. But it's something that says, oh, that's what it looks like. Ultimately, a vision is about what does it look like? What do we see? And great visions are aspirational, but they're also directional. It says, oh, this is what we want. This is what we're heading for. This is what we're striving to be. And so the more I can use stories, the more it helps make that vision, that picture, real and live and enables me to act consistent with it.
Is there any advice or suggestions you can give to the folks who are listening about how to reduce stress when you're working in a service organization?
Absolutely. Stress is a natural part of being in the service world, and if you can't handle the stress, then you need to choose a different role and a different occupation. And the reason for that is that you're dealing with people, you're dealing with relationships, and people don't always act the way we'd hope they'd act. And sometimes they come in with baggage that doesn't have anything to do with us or doesn't have anything to do with the service they've gotten. They just got up on the wrong side of the bed or didn't get properly weaned, as we say in Texas. And we have to deal with that. And I think what's critical is beyond the skill to how to handle those and beyond the support to how to handle those is again, the affirmation that I get. We like to think of that kind of affirming support, I'm here for you, as sort of the bulletproof vest, if you will, because it builds the kind of self-esteem that enables me to weather sometimes challenging customers. So I think that's one. I think a second is beyond the affirmation that gives me that sense of self-worth is an understanding of the customer, an understanding of the fact that the more you can work toward a relationship, not the transaction, the more you're apt to turn even the most challenging customer into a partner, into a friend. And so what you see as you look at the front line, those that are effective don't look at it as a transaction, and I'm just here to tactically get through this conversation. But they're interested in building a different kind of relationship, one that reflects respect and understanding and an attempt to understand that customer, one that reflects compassion. And I think when customers hear that, while there'll always be some who you want to give to the competition because they can't be changed, we call them customers from hell, I think most customers respond to that effectively. But to back up and say, okay, how do I get a frontline who's able to demonstrate respect and compassion and that sense of understanding and I'm here to build a relationship is determined by the leader. We know the biggest impact on frontline and how they serve customers is how they get served by their leader. And so it starts there. So the role of that leader is to build a kind of relationship with their employees that they in turn want to see them build with customers.
Chip Bell, thank you very much. And now for a portion of the show that we call You've Been Spotted. Think of this segment as our man or woman on the street interview. But rather than actually going out of our headquarters offices into the crazy bustle of Times Square pedestrian traffic, we'll approach a random person who is attending a workshop or seminar at one of our five executive conference centers. The American Management Association conference centers are located in New York City, Atlanta, Chicago, San Francisco, and Washington, D.C. A large number of our public seminar offerings are held at these centers. Please check our website, www.amanet.org, for more information about our centers and seminars. And now for You've Been Spotted, here's Kevin Lee.
Hi, this is Kevin Lee. I'm in the AMA Center asking participants in our seminars today, what's the worst customer service experience they've ever had? And the best one, too.
The worst customer service experience I've had was with a bank that misplaced my money. And after filling out hours and hours of forms and having, getting insurance involved and such, in days and weeks, they finally found it. It was in my father's account, which was unbelievable to me because how could you not know that? So that took, that was very stressful. It cost me a lot of money in the meantime because I was, pretty penniless at that point, so I had to borrow and everything else. And so it was... It was quite the experience. I'll leave that bank nameless.
I've been using this food delivery service for the last couple of years, and I had a delivery scheduled for this weekend, and I wasn't able to make it due to weather issues. And they said that they totally understood and that we would reschedule and I wouldn't be charged for the order. And, comes to find out the next day, I was charged twice for the order. And I called up the customer service in the morning, and I said, I believe that I was mischarged. They said, no, don't worry. It's definitely going to be taken back off your account. It's just a hold on the funds right now. So in the afternoon, I get this second email saying, we made a mistake. You didn't cancel in time, so you're definitely going to be charged. There's no way around it. We're sorry. So it's a couple of days later. I still haven't quite got it resolved, but it's left me with sort of a sour taste in my mouth for the company.
And so... What, as this is happening, what kind of impressions is it giving you about the company?
Just, I can't believe that the kind of service that I'm getting here, and I'm probably not going to use their service again.
So then you're saying that one bad experience is really all it takes for a loyal customer to suddenly turn on a service.
Yeah, in this situation, for me, it was. I don't think that, I've been treated with the respect that I should have been treated as being a loyal customer.
So Ignacio, tell me about the best customer service experience you've ever had.
We're staying in Miami, Florida, about 3 years ago at the Hyatt Regency in a place called Coconut Grove, very, very nice beachy area. And my wife and I went out jogging, and it was about, 8:30 when we came back into the lobby area. Immediately, the person in the front desk came out and said, "How was the jog?" "Oh, it was fantastic." And we were just about to get on the elevators. He says, "You want some water? Can I get you something to drink?" And kind of looked at each other. That, we were breathless at that moment. I said, "That would be nice." Person stopped what he was doing, had someone just watch the front desk area, went behind the bar, got us some water, brought it to us, just handed it to us. It was unsolicited. It was just so selfless. It was so nice. We wrote a wonderful recommendation. It was just something that he noticed us. He could have said hi or ignored us altogether, but he chose to, accommodate us for something he anticipated that we were thirsty, and he was right. And it was such a nice little gesture. It was, like I said, it was about almost 4 years ago, and it still stayed with me.
Remember, we appreciate your feedback, so please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. And thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to Edgewise.